Good morning, everybody. Welcome here this morning. Is it not a good morning? I think it's a good morning. We don't often get good cold weather like this, right? You know, in the early 90s, the farmers were praying for cold weather like this. The thinking always was the boll weevils had destroyed cotton farming down in the south. And then in the 90s, it came up here. The cotton strippers, when they went down south, brought the boll weevils up here with them. And so they knew and they understood that if the boll weevils had a long cold winter, they didn't have enough body fat to burn through the winter, so they died. So they were hoping for cold weather, and I think there's other things that it's good for the soil, it's good for the environment. I think it's just all around good, although it doesn't feel good. But on a Sunday like today, when we don't have to get out and work, it's good. So, yeah, a couple of things I wanted to say before I get started with the message. First of all, welcome home, Margie. Margie's back from Belize. I think it's quite a shock to come from 80 to zero instead of zero to 80. Yeah, welcome back anyway. Good to have you back. I spoke with John Lowen yesterday, and he also greeted the church from Stratton, Ontario. And I told him what our temperature was, and he laughed. He said theirs was minus 37, and ours was like minus 9 Celsius at the time. But anyway, God bless you, and we'll be okay. I want to speak this morning on the title of the message. Years ago, I was a big-time listener of Zach Poonen. Zach Poonen is from India, and he preached in the charity churches all around the country, and there was cassette tapes, so you guys know how long ago this was. There's cassette tapes that I was listening to. I still have a stack. If anybody wants some, you can have them. I have a whole box of cassette tapes. I'd be glad to give them to you, because I don't know what to do with them anymore. But they were passed around everywhere, and I would always listen to his stuff. And one of the things that Zach Poonen said was that we don't need an introduction and we don't need a title for the message. We just need to share God's word. And so that was my thinking for a lot of years, that I don't need to do introductions in the messages and I don't need to worry about the titles. Well, when I put this message together, it's entitled The Teachable Spirit with a / Pride. And when I was going over the message, then all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know, because I went to Bible school in Mexico and they said, if you have the incorrect title, you can ruin the message. So I hope and pray that even though the title is a little bit different than what you might think when you hear that, but my intention is simply to bring across something that it's one of these causes the other. And the goal that I have this morning is to monster up halten that we need to have a teachable spirit. That's my goal with this, that all of us need to have. And I want to start off with you. The text verse is Matthew 23, 12. And the reason I brought all this up is so that you can get it together, so that you understand that if the title doesn't quite fit what you think it's supposed to mean when it says teachable spirit and then pride, then hopefully you can get it together that what keeps us from learning is pride. To have a teachable spirit takes humility, and I'm going to try to prove that through the message. So the 12th verse of Matthew chapter 23 says, "Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." There's not question marks here. It doesn't say whoever exalts himself might be humbled or could be humbled with a question mark there. It says will be humbled, and then it says, "And he who humbles himself," so it's something we do in our Protestant Calvinism that we're around so much, it's always that we have nothing to do. There's nothing that you, no effort you make. And here it says, he who humbles himself, that's a doing thing, that's something that all of us have to do, will be exalted. So the message this morning, like I said, is about humility, but it's really where I want to go with that is that all of us would have a teachable spirit. When I was growing up, the only way that pride was really lifted up or brought out was how people dressed. That was, if people dressed a certain way, that was considered hochfertig, grouch. That's the only place that pride was applied. There are many, many ways that pride will come out. Pride was only seen as that one thing, and pride comes out in many, many different ways. Some people have pride in their appearance. That's very normal. I found it very interesting when John Miller was here and he's talking to the youth. Who remembers what he said about your appearance? Anybody? Not all at the same time, one at a time. Do you remember that he said that it was actually bad for you to have good appearance? He said it was detrimental. You remember that? Anybody? Yeah, he actually said that was detrimental. It's the first time I ever heard it. And when he said it, I'm like, no kidding. That's always you know somebody that's a really attractive person, they almost always have a bad attitude. Very rarely. So that is definitely part of it. But pride comes out in many, many other ways. And I'm just going to mention a few here. A lot of people have pride about their intelligence. They always have to prove how smart they are. That's their, no matter what conversation they're in, they always have to prove how smart they are, and that's almost always pride. And then you have how crafty they can be, how they can deceive people. You'll hear them talk about how they manage to deceive somebody. That's another, and it's some form of pride too. And then you have family name. There's people who think that their family name is so special. I have one guy, when I'm running to him at the restaurant, he always hacks on me because he says he would hate to have the name Schmidt. He thinks that's awful. It's good for me. We have a good time with that. But there are people who have great pride in their family name. And then there's people who have great pride in their boys, especially how strong they are, or maybe their physical physique. Maybe they say things like, I come from a genetical background. My genetics are so that we can really build muscle. We're healthy people. So there's pride comes out in all kinds of ways. And if you want to keep Matthew open, I want to go to Proverbs. And I think there's almost nobody here that remembers when Proverbs chapter 6 became a big verse to me. Not verse, but verses. There was something there that I'd often read, and I was always reading it in English. And so I was never really understanding what it said. And then one day I went and read it in the High German, and it made more sense to me. So it says in Proverbs chapter 6, and verse 16, it says, these six things the Lord hates, yes, and the seventh is an abomination to him. And I was like, if you already hate something, what's more? And then I went and read it in High German, and it says it's in Groil. And I obviously understood the word Groil better than I did the word abomination. I understood, and I'm going to go ahead and read them over, even though that's not the topic, but except for the very, very first time. And I want this to sink in. The Lord hates a proud look. When people act like they're special and that shows up on their face, God says, I don't like that. This is what God's word says. God says, I don't like that. And I'm going to go ahead and read the rest of it that he also says that he hates. A lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and then the groil. I all of a sudden understood God hates these six things, but the seventh one, he has an abomination against that one, and that one is one who sows discord among the brothers. Einer, wo der Einigkeit verstreitet among the brother, Gott sagt, ich habe ein Groll gegen dort. But the main one I wanted to look at this morning here is that first one, is that proud look. You will see when people have, maybe they're really good at something, and then they, and it's, through this message, I hope you get it. I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't have satisfaction in things, and that we shouldn't try to accomplish things to the best of our ability. But we need to do it in humility and see what God has for us here further. So back in Matthew, and this time I want to go to Matthew chapter 18. And I want to read the first verse there. In Matthew 18 and verse 1 it says, at that time the disciples came to Jesus saying, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And the early years when we were preaching a clear gospel, say 30 years ago, there was a lot of people from our own people that said you shouldn't use examples and you shouldn't use any kind of props or anything. You shouldn't do that. You should just read and that's that, you know. Well, I believe that Jesus was one of the finest teachers that used all kinds of simple things that would stick with us. For example, here he says, The disciples ask him who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, and then Jesus answers and said, and he calls a little child to him, so that's a demonstration, right? He's not just talking, he brings a child, puts a child on his lap, and then he said unto them, unless you are converted and become as a little child, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as a little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Here we start to see that there's a difference here, that there's something unique, there's something different about Jesus' teaching. This pride that I was talking about, that was very, very common in Israel. America is a very, very proud country, is it not? The nation of America is extremely proud. It always bothers me when I hear the president or any of them say, they go into a war somewhere and say, "We will win. We are America. We have always won." That is nothing but pure pride. Israel did that. One day she fell. God allowed her to fall. But this kind of pride, and Israel had pride too. So here's Jesus teaching these Israelites, and they want to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, which is a clear indication that they had not understood the ministry of Jesus. The ministry of Jesus was exactly the opposite. It was upside down. Here they were, who's going to be the greatest? And Jesus, what a demonstration. These big men who think they're so special, Jesus brings a little child, puts it on his lap and says, unless you're going to be like this, you're not going to inherit the kingdom of God. Unless you become like this, that's what he says. Unless you are converted, which means to change. That's the word repentance and converted are often applied in ways that are much more than they need to be. It's a simple word. It means to change. So here it is, converted as and becomes as a little child, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself as this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. How does a child demonstrate humility? When Jesus said this, what did he mean by that? Did he mean because the child is little? I mean, that's, I think, sometimes the thinking that it's just a child. That's not what he's bringing out. Children are very, very unique. And children and I think every family has children. So observe children. You will see all kinds of things. But one of the things I want to say first, though, is that he didn't mean for us to be childish. That's not what he's talking about. In 1 Corinthians 13:11, it says, When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. I'm not talking about being childish. There are a lot of grown adults that are very childish. That's not what he's talking about. He is talking about being like a child. The child, and I will give you an example right away. A child is not too proud to ask for things. A child is not too proud to cry when things hurt. A child is not too proud to apologize when they did things wrong. And those are some of the things. And I think the number one thing is that a child has that teachable spirit. A child is always asking this, asking that, and asking the other. And to you parents here, I want to say answer them. The day comes when they quit asking. So when they ask a question, take the time. And I know it seems like forever. When our oldest was born, that was just one of the things that just blew me away, his questions and questions and questions. But one of the opposite things of not having a teachable spirit is when they always say, "I know." If you try to teach somebody something or sharing something with somebody, and the first thing that comes out of their mouth is, "I know," that's not a teachable spirit. A teachable spirit says, "I need to be asking. I ask the questions," and it needs to be, that is one of the indications and indicators that we are have a teachable spirit, and we need to continue to do that. I want to look at a man in the Bible with you that did both. First he did the one, and then he went through a very, very serious school of life. And then once he had gone through that school of life, and we're not going to spend a lot of time finding those details, but just in his little statement that he says when he comes to himself, then you realize he has come to a teachable spirit. And that man that I'm talking about, there's actually two that we want to talk about here in Daniel chapter 2. One is what I'm describing here, and the other one is the opposite. The other one is, and of course, God is using the other one to speak life into this man's life and to actually bring him some truth. So in Daniel chapter 2, we're not going to read the chapter, but I do want to lift up a couple of verses there. So Daniel had a dream, the king had a dream, and he wanted to know what this dream meant. And so Daniel interpreted the dream for him in verse 37. If you're in Daniel chapter 2 and verse 37, he says, "You, O king, are a king of kings, for the God of heaven has given you a kingdom, power, strength, and glory." And I want to stop right there for just a little bit. There's a key word in here that should have helped Nebuchadnezzar, that should have helped the king. There's a key word in here, And that key word is given. See, the king thought he was all this. He was this big guy because he had built all this. And here's this lowly prophet telling him that this was given to you. And then he goes on in verse 38 and he says, "And wherever the children of men dwell, or the beast of the field or the birds of the heaven, he has given them into your hand and has made you ruler over them. You are this head of gold." And he's interpreting this dream there. What I really wanted to bring out here is just simply this, that this was given to him. Simple, a couple of simple questions for yourself. What do you have that wasn't given to you? Now, I realize we have to work, but let's just get a little bit closer, to a little bit more personal. What did you do for the color of your eyes? How did you determine that you're going to have that size of face, or that size of ear, or that color hair? You didn't, did you? Was that given to you? How about the brain that you have between your ears, the ability to think and reason? Did you go pick that out somewhere, or was that given to you? We are given things, and when we start acting like we have done something to this, then we are just like Nebuchadnezzar. We are oozing with pride, thinking that this is what I have done. And we need to learn, if we continue to move forward, if you go to the 27th verse of the 4th chapter, you will see he's continuing to, Daniel continues to talk to Nebuchadnezzar, and then in verse 26, and then in verse 28, it says, all this came upon Nebuchadnezzar. And then if you'll notice in verse 29, it says, at the end of the 12 months, he was walking about the royal palace of Babylon. And I don't think that we can imagine in that day how beautiful a place it was and what all it had. And here he is walking on this rooftop of this palace. And the king spoke, saying, so he didn't heed the advice from Daniel. Daniel gave him the advice, and I think I might have missed that verse. But Daniel, no, it's right here. Daniel, if you back up just a little bit, Daniel says in verse 27, therefore, O king, let my advice be acceptable to you. Break off your sins from being righteous. And I believe that the proper explanation of that word would be self-righteous. And your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. So then you go on to the next verses, and it says he's walking on top of the palace, and the king spoke, saying, Is not this the great Babylon that I have built? And then it says, for a royal dwelling, for my mighty power, and for the honor, my majesty. Completely wrong. Completely wrong. And then it says, while the word was still on the king's mouth, a voice fell from heaven. King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken. The kingdom has departed from you! Exclamation point. When God has spoken, he has spoken. There is not a question mark there. There's no discussion. He says, this is done. And they shall drive you from men, and your dwelling shall be with the beast of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. The king didn't see that. The king thought, I've got this. This is me. This is mine. And God showed him, and he was warned. He got the warning. He didn't accept the warning. God's people still like that many, many times. They get a warning, and they don't listen. And the story continues and is concluded. If you'll go to verse 34, it says, and here we see him changing. And I want to share something personal here. If you ever know somebody that through sin or abuse of their body or whatever, lose their mind and they become senile or not clear anymore, I have a personal person in my life that is like this. And so I would pray this for that person all the time. It says here, at the end of the time, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted my eyes to heaven. That's not a great big statement, is it? But it simply means that he lifted his eyes to God. He was recognizing and acknowledging who God was. He no longer was God. Now God was God. This man was driven into the wilderness. He grew feathers instead of hair. It's an amazing story. Go home and read it. It's a very interesting story to read. He grows claws on his fingers. and he eats grass. He drinks dew from the, he gets his water from the dew on the grass. This man was completely, he was the highest man in the world, went to be the lowest man in the world. And all he needed to do was give God the glory and honor for what he had. That's all he had to do. And he refused to do it. And so then this is where he wound up. The good story is, if you continue to read the story, it says, I lifted my eyes to heaven and my understanding returned to me. The ability, and I was talking about this, this is a gift from God. When we have the ability to reason, and that's what it says here, that he, his understanding returned to me, he says, and I blessed the Most High. Listen to that. A total change. I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, what have you done? Beautiful story. I love that, that how that comes out. And I'm so thankful that we have this written down for our learning and for our admonishment. We can read this and learn for ourselves. You take that verse out of Matthew and it says to me, it says to you, humble yourself. That's an active thing that we're to do. And then we don't have to go through these things. Now, I want to tell you that I think a lot of us go through something similar like this, not anywhere near to this extent, but we go through some of these things. And when we come to ourselves and we say what Daniel said here, we acknowledge who God is and we give him the glory and honor that is due him, that is beautiful. I want to bring this into a personal application here this morning. Just this last week, one of the brothers said to me, we were talking about somebody living on the streets, homeless, and he said this, and he was true when he said, he was correct when he said, in this country, no one has to live like that, and I totally agree. But those of us who are working hard and doing the right things, we should do those things, and I'm not here to criticize you for that, but I do want to point something out. One of the applications that we have to make here is that if we become successful, we often look down at the people who are not successful. And we'll say things like, if he would just get out there and work already, he's too lazy. Or we say, he doesn't know how to manage his money. He's just not good with his money. And maybe those things are true. It's very possible that those things are true. But from our side, we need to realize that what we have was given to us. Just like everything else that you have, like the example that I gave about your color of your eyes, the size of your ears, the height of your body, whatever it is, that was given to you, and you can do nothing. The Bible even says it. You cannot make yourself grow. I would have when I was younger. Now I don't really care. But I think some of us dishonor God with not being thankful with who we are. But the other thing is also true. Some years ago, what I want to bring out with this statement is that just proves that we are not where we should be. I believe that's that same attitude that Nebuchadnezzar had, the king. I did this. I caught it, you don't. And we shouldn't do that. We should give God the glory, no matter how hard we work for it. I want to give you a thought. Some years ago, I was in a conversation, and we were talking about one of the billionaires in this country. One of the billionaires, and I don't remember which one it was. It was Steve Jobs or Bill Gates or one of these guys that came. And honestly, Bill Gates didn't come from nothing. He was actually already raised with money. But some of these guys became very, very, very wealthy. And we were talking about this very subject, about working hard, applying ourselves, learning. And all these things are true, and I believe them. And I've practiced them pretty much my whole adult life because I believe them. But I also know that there's a blessing that was given to me. Since I am on this continent, how about God had chosen to have me born to an out-of-wedlock mother in Africa? Would my opportunities not be much lower? Or how about if I was born to a wedlock, to out-of-wedlock mother in Russia? Or any one of us that's successful, what if he took us and planted us in Russia right now with nothing? Would we build ourselves back? No. The other things have to be there too. And why are they there? How is it that I am born on this continent? God chose that, right? So I don't have anything to brag about. All I can do is give God the glory. And I think we sometimes do exactly what Nebuchadnezzar did. I've been in conversations where someone would say things like, this I have worked for, this is mine. This is because I made the right decisions. Well, a lot of that is true. But let's be careful. Let's give God glory for what he is doing for us. So now back to Matthew 18. And the verses there, verse 3, where it says that unless you are converted and become as a little child, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. I want to spend a little bit more time of what this looks like. I already brought some things up, but I want to just a couple of more. One of them is huge to me, is pride has interesting things that it does to us. Some people can't apologize, that's pride. They just they know they were wrong, but even sometimes you can get into an argument with someone, not that I ever do, but you can get into an argument about somebody and find out that you were wrong and not go back and admit it. That's pride. One of the clear indicators that you can do when you were wrong, admit it. Even if it takes a text or a phone call. Even if you're not together anymore and you go, oh, wait a minute, I was wrong. It's so liberating to just admit. That's one of the things that children do. Children, they will admit. When they are challenged, they will admit. Another one that I already spoke about a little bit, children have this teachable spirit, this teachable attitude. They want to learn. There are very few children who don't want to learn. Most children will ask question after question, and those are learning mechanisms. They want to know. They need to know. And we need to do that same thing. We need to be asking God. We need to be asking him questions. And, of course, we find those answers through the scriptures. I want to share one with you this morning. Maybe you've heard me say this before, but in the early years of my Christian walk, when I didn't understand a verse, it was really hard on me because I wanted to understand all of them. And I realized after a while that I just can't understand all of them. And then I would take a verse that I don't understand or a question that I had about scripture and put it away in my mind on a shelf. And then when I'm reading, that's always back there. And when I'm reading, all of a sudden it's answered. One of the questions that I had for years, if the enemy knew nailing Jesus to the cross would take all power away from him, then why did he do it? And then one day I was reading in 1 Corinthians 1, and it says, if the enemy had known, he wouldn't have done it. The enemy was completely blind to what he was doing. And so those are the kinds of things, and I got one this morning too. We live in a very Protestant Calvinistic society. And one of the questions that has been on my mind quite a bit is they say, one of the things in the tulip is that we are totally depraved. And it is true that we are total sinners and we need help. There's no question. But the way they bring it out is that you can't even respond. That is actually not true. Christ has set it up so that we have to respond. And they will say things like, there's no good in you. And then I started thinking about it one day when I'm with my cousin from California he calls himself an atheist, but I believe he's an agnostic, which means he was a believer and then rejected that. His wife is an atheist, but he was always trying to prove to me that he was going to do good things or that he was doing good things. And I'm like, why? If there's not a God, why are you trying to do good? And then also, if you can go to one of these really, really religious places, they're always trying to do good, and they're always trying to prove that they're doing good. That's that element of God that stayed in us at the fall of man. There was an element of God that stays in us that wants to do good. And if you want to see the answer to that, it's in Matthew. Neil was doing the opening this morning, and he wasn't talking on that, but when he read over it, it says, you being evil know how to give good gifts. There's that element of good that's in us. We want to do good. And that, anyway, so that's a good thing to do. A teachable spirit is always asking and always looking and always ready to accept when a truth comes in. And put those verses away or those questions that you have and be childlike, not childish, just childlike, and have those questions in your heart and just let God answer them whenever you're ready. Some other examples, and then I won't take too much more of your time, but some other examples of children easily forgive, which is an indication of humility. And the way you can see that is children sometimes still have their teardrops hanging on their cheeks and are already smiling and laughing at the one that caused the pain. That's a beautiful picture of what it means to be childlike. We can still have pain from whoever did that to us, and we can still accept and embrace them again, and then we should. So what I wanted to do this morning was tell you that one of the indicators that somebody has a teachable spirit is that they're humble. When they're not humble, you can't learn. It just doesn't work. A proud person just can't get there. And I want to bring one more in here, one more teaching or idea or whatever you want to call it, and I won't have time to go into it this morning, but I do want to touch on it. If you'll go with me to 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, and I want to pull this one thing in there. And there are other things that keep us from learning too, that from having a teachable spirit. I've over the years, when you're in leadership, people expect you to have an answer for everything. And if you don't, sometimes you're viewed as an incompetent leader or whatever. And so over the years, I just made a decision years ago that I don't have to know everything. I don't know everything. So if I don't know everything, why should I act like I know everything? So I just, sometimes when people ask me about something, I'll just tell them I don't know. And there's been knee-jerk reactions to that. Like, they're like, you should know. Well, I want to know. And I think that's a teachable spirit. A teachable spirit says, I don't know everything yet. I'm still learning. And I don't think you can ever get to that place where you can never say, I've got it all figured out. If you do, I feel very sorry for you. You have arrived at a very, very bad place. And I don't think anybody here is like that. But if you have, you are at a very bad place. I knew a man that had converted in his teens and was a pastor of a church for 30 years and had retired as a pastor, continued to preach. He was 70 years old, standing behind the pulpit, and I'm sitting in the congregation listening, and he said, I learned something new yesterday. I'm like, wow, 70 years old and he's learning? I want to learn too. My attitude about learning totally changed that day. It was that simple. Up to that point, I had this attitude. When I was 14, I quit school, and I wasn't going to learn anymore. Of course, I was all wrong because you continue to learn. I didn't know how to weld or anything like that. I learned all kinds of stuff yet after that. That's learning, too. Just I didn't learn in classroom anymore. But when it came to books, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. When that man said that, somehow or another, that sparked in me that desire to keep on studying, not just reading, but studying. So I believe pride is an indicator that we're not teachable. When we're not learning, we're not teachable, it's because we have pride. Or this last one that I'm going to mention, it's 1 Peter 5:5. And then I'm going to tell you that there's more, but these are the two that I want to focus on. And this one I'm just going to use as closing it, in closing. Likewise, you younger people, it's talking to you guys, right here. Likewise, you younger people, you. And then it said, submit yourself to your elders. And I believe in this case, the reference to elders is parents, but also leadership of church. And then it says, yes, all of you be submissive to one another. If we are not submissive, if I'm not submissive, I just won't go anywhere in life. It says, all of you be submissive to one another and be clothed with humility. Wow, what a picture. What a beautiful picture that he actually gives us a picture that we would put on when somebody looks at us, they see humility. And that should be that way. And people, you know, we were reading in Proverbs 6, they can also see when the opposite is there too. So may God grant it to us that we have a teachable spirit. And if we notice that in some areas we're not or whatever it is, humble yourself. You know what that means? You know what it means to humble yourself? It is simply coming to God and acknowledging our shortcomings, acknowledging that I don't know everything, and I'm dependent on you. I humble myself before you. It's not that complicated. And since it says humble yourself, it means it's in our hands to do. That doesn't mean I now can go around saying, well, God didn't grant me humility. That's not what the Bible teaches. So may God grant his word. Let's stand for a word of prayer.